You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-all-fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code pod20 for 20% off your first product.
So welcome back to Pax Europiana, to my podcast about European peace and European prosperity. And this is about economic reform, this section now. I will now talk about the so-called pan-European energy market. And what I mean with that, it's quite clear. It's basically completing the European Energy Union, but also making sure the UK stays in this pan-European energy market, and also with EFTA and with SEFTA, Ukraine, Moldova and Georgia, and obviously also Turkey and the Balkans to be in one energy system. One full integrated European energy system, as independent as possible from hostile Russia as possible. Yeah? That's of course the target. Strategically, we fund the Russian wars of aggression in Ukraine and Syria with our energy consumers' transfers, which amount about 300-330 billion a year. This is European energy consumer money. They have no other choice. This huge chunk of money moves towards Russia, and they transform it into about half of their state revenues from energy revenues. And then they have the money to buy these tanks, to wage these wars in foreign lands, in Ukraine, in Georgia, in Syria, in Libya, and also fund this political intervention in the European Union, in the UK for Brexit, in America, because they have this excess benefit of this secure income from European energy consumers. This is basically how the Soviet Union could sustain the terrible 70s and until the middle of the 80s. And I talked a lot about this, about how to win the Second Cold War already in one of the previous podcasts. But we really have to make sure that we win it and that we reduce this strategic dependency of Russia systematically. And by the way, that's also very good for the European environment, for the European climate, for global climate. Because never forget, under what kind of terrible condition Russia is doing energy extraction in Siberia. And certainly not under EU environmental conditions. There's a lot of populism from the left and the right about American gas fracking. Fracking, that's the negative word, it sounds very dangerous. You know, but that's under American environmental standards, which America as a leading market democracy has also very strict standards. Yeah? And what do you think, how the Russian gas is coming out of the Siberian ground and how much they care for their environment, and who will have one day to clean up all this mess once Putin is gone? Certainly the Western taxpayers will support then free federal Russia in the future, and it will be on our costs. So it might be temporarily cheaper, but for the long term, it will be all on our costs again to fix the environmental legacy of the Soviet Union and of Putin's Russia one day when we will have access, and we will, because we are in to win it, and we will win this confrontation, and there will be a free Russia, and it will be for us to fund this transition, that's for sure. Anyhow, there's so much environmental damage, we could make an extra podcast about it. I will do one in the future. But now I would like to talk about this European Energy Union, and that with Ukraine together, also with Georgia, with Moldova, it all makes a lot of sense, and we can really be more independent from Russia in all key sectors. Also, we import a lot from Russia in coal, and why we do that. We end our coal in Europe in order to be climate friendly, and then we import more coal from Russia. I mean, that's bizarre. Or in uranium. I'm also against nuclear energy, but we use a lot of nuclear energy in the countries in the European Union which have nuclear energy. Like, for example, France, the best and the most important producer, but many of them do that. Yeah? And so we take this from Russia again. We can also buy it from Kazakhstan or from Australia or from Canada. So why don't we buy it from other countries? Why do we again have this kind of subsidy of Russia with this import of Russian coal, Russian uranium, Russian petrol and Russian gas? In all key sectors of energy supply, that are the four main materials, we should make systematically that by 2024, at the end of this European mandate in 2024, we are at 50% of the today's consumption. Not 300 billion, but just 150 billion. Very good for the global climate, very good for our strategic independence of Europe, very good for our trade balance, very good for the people in Ukraine and Syria when Russia has less money to wage war anywhere, and very bad for Putin and his autocracy. And also very good maybe for Russian democracy, because it will be easier to maybe have transformation of Russia in 2024 when the money is running out, and that it should be. So that's really important. Yeah? Let me also talk about infrastructure. In energy business, infrastructure means a lot because you know, you need pipeline, they are very expensive, you need gas, you need electricity transmission lines, you need to build the generation capacity. I'm talking about all of these many billions of euros. And especially historically, the energy infrastructure of Eastern Europe is built from Moscow to the periphery, basically Eastern Europe. Yeah? And that is very wrong. We, when this is now European Union and NATO allies, and including Ukraine in the Pan-European Energy Union as a DCFTA partner, it's the European taxpayers who has the responsibility to be built integrated energy infrastructure in all aspects. A lot of that has happened already. But I remember we were talking in the European Parliament in 2004. 15 years later, it's not completed. What is wrong? And get it done. We have all the money. Recently now, 750 billion was approved for European additional funding. And get this Eastern European energy infrastructure done. This is very beneficial for all Europeans. Yeah? It must be sure that we don't depend on any kind of Soviet legacy infrastructure. All of the energy infrastructure must be harmonized, European standards, clear European one net, one grid, one way to do it. And this is very good for the whole of the European energy and economy and strategic independence. Because I know everybody talks about the climate. I am also for a better climate. I'm also for a better environment, absolutely. But the number one priority must be always our strategic independence. Yeah? It cannot be that we reduce consumption of certain goods in Europe just then to import more from Russia. I mean, that's utterly wrong. Yeah? So let's make sure we do that smart and we do it decently. And here it comes very clear. You understand what I want to say next. Obviously, Nord Stream 2 must be cancelled immediately out of strategic independence conditions of the Western world and of the European Union from Russia. And we have to import less in order not to fund Russian autocracy more. And it's also quite ridiculous to bring more carbon energy because it's just a different form of carbon energy. And, you know, the argument that coal is more dirty than gas might be true. But okay, when it's only about that, then let's only build nuclear power. You know, the most important argument must be what is our strategic independence. Yeah? And the second important argument is obviously what is good for the environment and our economic sustainability. Yeah? And they must be in balance. And then it all makes sense. And we can, for example, I'm now since 2 years already saying, get rid of all petrol-driven cars in the European Union and in Ukraine everywhere. It's no need, yeah, because now we have electromobility. Let's make sure with 2030 there's a cut-off point and no more electric mobility, no only electric mobility cars will be licensed in regulation in the European Union by 2030. All consumers will know it. And some might be with some extra exemption in some specific niches, yeah. And nobody has to sell his car in a sense because you can run it until 2040. And when it's an old timer or any kind of specific agriculture or whatever kind of, then you can continue individually with some specific license. But in principle, by 2040, we don't need petrol, diesel, carbon in the mobility sector anymore. And so we say it very clearly, we tell it to everybody, 20 years transition, it's all fine and it's doable. And technology helps us and Russia will not win. And that's very good, I think so. So we have talked about this and also we have, yeah, but in, for example, we have to be a little bit smarter than just to shout no coal like children, yeah? And this is not the task, yeah? We have to be sure which country has what kind of energy potential. And for example, a country which is very dear to my heart in Kosovo is full of coal. And then to say, Kosovo, you cannot use your coal and you must be poor, it's totally ridiculous. And so what we can do is obviously transport the coal installation from Germany, where there is no consensus for coal anymore, and then build them up in Kosovo and transform this coal into under European standards of environmental protection and low pollution, produce that coal into electricity and to put it back in the net. We can replace Russian coal with Kosovo coal. It works very well. It's not that coal is the enemy. Yeah? And it's not the task to immediately have carbon zero world tomorrow at no costs, whatever, yeah? At extreme costs, whatever. So no matter what the cost. The real task is our strategic independence from Russia. And it's also better to import petrol from Algeria, from Saudi Arabia, from these are our allies. These are countries which we have traditionally, economically worked very well, and there is no aggression from any of them towards us. Russia is the country which is attacking the West and wants to turn around the current world order. And this is very dangerous, so we have to reduce and to cut our energy supplies from dependency from Russia. Let me also reiterate how Russia works. Yeah? So the system is, you have Rosatom, for example, that's the Russian state nuclear company. They make several projects in the European Union. The most famous is Pax in Hungary, but also in Finland, also in Slovakia, and there are talks about Slovenia and the Czech Republic. So obviously that's very good for the elite, because what is Russia doing? It brings the funding, it brings the technology, it brings the company, but it also brings some benefits in form of corruption and percentage for the elites of these countries. So they like this kind of cooperation very well, because with Western companies, it's extremely much more complicated to have a benefit for the prime minister. But of course, the Russians have that as a kind of a raison d'etre, as a business model always calculated in. The same is true in the energy sector, which is the pipeline story, because you always then give about 1% for the elite of the host country. And that's also quite logical what is happening in the political system. If the prime minister is clean, let's say Orban doesn't take money, you can always give this 1% to fund his opposition party. Once he has understood that logic, he will come and say exactly what you want. Yeah? And he will take the money and be happy that his opposition money is not taking it. So this way, the Soviet Union and Russia has corrupted all Central European elites since the last 50 years. And it's not a big secret and it's not a conspiracy theory, but it's simply facts. You can read it anywhere in the internet. And you know, we basically produce not only war and aggression, but also the corruption with these deals with the Russian state companies, whose own business model is exactly this kind of privatization of revenues, if you want to call it like this. It works always like this, that you have one intermediary, which is totally useless, but you sell then to this intermediary, and this intermediary has a percentage system in place to put black box systems available in Switzerland or elsewhere, and then to distribute it to the beneficiary or to the political elites of the host countries. And the country consumes a lot of gas, like Austria, for example, or Hungary, Slovakia. So this gives huge volumes for such redistribution or kickbacks, if you want to call it like this. And you can explain the Hungarian history since 2014. Hungary is now a Russian ally in everything but the name, especially because of this Pax, it's not the Pax Europiana, it's the Pax as a city in Hungary. and this kind of nuclear power station. It costs 10 billion euros about, and it's a huge project. And then you can calculate what is 1%, and you can understand the system, and then it's more attractive than working according to EU rules. And then obviously Orbán is always against sanctions against Russia, sanctions against Lukashenko, and is against Ukraine NATO accession and all these things, because that's part of the game. So, yeah, you see a similar dynamic all over the pipeline countries, also then in Turkey to some extent and somewhere else. I would like to say also about Turkey is very important, maybe the next one, because we have found there's a lot of new gas in the East Mediterranean, in this basin between Israel, Egypt, Turkey, Cyprus, and a lot of excitement. And the French have even put some navy there. And it was very, very exciting because there was a lack of American leadership. So all these medium powers, they were bullying each other for these resources, which they anyhow have no money to lift it so easily. And so I propose to have a joint exploration company set up by the European Union, funded by the EIB, and in charge of doing the exploration of these resources. It's a much better way. And then to have a revenue sharing, and anyhow, it can be done also by American companies, that can be private sector partnership later by this agency. Sorry. And it's a much better way to do that together and to keep peace between our alliance, because Egypt is an ally, it's an Israel ally, of course Turkey is a NATO ally, and Greece and Cyprus as well. So we are completely out of our mind if we allow such it's a treasure, it's fantastic to have it, this gas. But then we're going into this conflict kind of statement just because of this. It's anyhow years to lift it. And obviously, it's much better if we do that in an EU EIB-funded exploration company, jointly owned or in revenue-sharing agreements with all the riverine states of the East Mediterranean, and brokered, and also with the help of our American allies, to make sure there is peace in the East Med, because we need to concentrate on containing hostile Russia. The second thing is what is urgently necessary is to have a central EU gas procurement agency. That means that the European Union is doing the gas negotiations with Russia directly, with Gazprom. So some might say now, after the experience of the vaccination central procurement, that's not such a good idea. And that's another topic, obviously, in the speed maybe and in the pressure. There was not everything going right. And it's, of course, a big responsibility to do gas procurement for all Europe together. But then the size is really there, because one consumer and one supplier, it's the EU gas agency and it's the Gazprom. And here you have market power, here you can control things, here you can reduce corruption. And it takes this kind of individual negotiating power and prices and corruption of Russia towards Hungary, Bulgaria, Romania, and maybe other countries out of the equation. And then we can also rationalize the gas market and also have competitive gas markets then in the member states and overall. But the relation with Gazprom must be centralized. Yeah? And this must be done by the European Union, by the DG Energy in a specific gas procurement agency. And also that must be certainly supervised by anti-corruption experts, because it's a really big volume and it's, of course, very big. That's for gas. In the uranium sector, I'm against buying uranium from Russia, and I'm against Rosatom doing any project of nuclear dimension in such a strategic sector in the European Union or in any of the member states or future member states, also not in Ukraine. And definitely we have to come to an agreement that such a strategic important project like nuclear power cannot be done by a hostile power, and Russia is that. So Rosatom, get out of Finland, get out of Hungary, and get out of Slovakia, whatever the status of that project is, and out of Slovenia, Czech Republic. No, no, no Rosatom in the European Union. That is over and out. And no Nord Stream 2, obviously, as well. So I'm pretty clear on these most important things. And so we can build a pan-European energy market. We can obviously then in the form of free trade agreements with the Gulf Cooperation Council and intensify our cooperation with Saudi Arabia. That's pretty good. And also with other countries which are supplying key energy resources like Australia. We don't have a free trade agreement. That's a pity. We should definitely have it and get our uranium and our coal from Australia. That's really good. But we should not subsidize the aggression by Russia against Europe with our own revenue streams. So that's very logical. And I call to end Nord Stream 2 and to interdict Rosatom's business in Eastern Europe. And that will be the most important and also reduce coal from Russia and also make sure that we somehow avoid this conflict in the East Mediterranean. But there are anyhow already negotiations going, I see. Since we have a better American leadership, there is understanding that we should try to be more united. And the common energy market has also many other aspects, like working on efficiency, energy savings, green technology, alternative energy, optimize energy taxation, obviously, make sure that we tax dirty energy more than clean energy, and also have a European grid which is working stable, supplying business and consumers stable. There is, of course, huge tasks here. That's a really important economic sector. And that's why I'm also calling for a European energy infrastructure company owned by the EIB. Because what we have today is a lot of these state-owned companies run by the member states. I referred to that already in one of the podcasts about privatization. But what we need also is to make sure that, for example, the energy grid is centralized in one European company. And there can be a mixed shareholder status between the EIB and the member states or also regional utilities, but not to have these complications and also not to have all these collusions, corruptions in the energy sector. That's really very bad and we should try to avoid it. And centralization in such a European public company in the energy sector, I think, will create also what many call for the European champions. Yeah? But by combining not private sector companies, but making mergers between the big state companies, yeah, and running them more efficient in European-wide infrastructure projects, and make sure that not every small country has to build all the energy for itself, because we are talking here about European integrated grids in gas, in energy, in electricity, obviously, but also, you know, my thoughts about railways and other things. So this is very important, I think, such a European energy infrastructure company, maybe several of them, one for gas, one for electricity, and maybe one for other sectors additionally, yeah, that can be defined. And this is much better. And it also will help, again, I explain, by reducing the debt level and the collusion and corruption levels, and also the market size issue in which we face in European of 27 countries. And always the member states, when they don't want to reduce the debt, they can keep accordingly the shareholder equity of these European companies if they prefer. And anyhow, they will be always involved because energy and politics cannot be very much separated, because there is always a public interest in the price regulation, in where the infrastructure is built and what it costs and where all this is bought and which is the energy mix of any country. There's, of course, huge political complications and implications. But one thing is sure, we should not be like an annex of the Russian Empire because we need their energy. We are not so dependent of them anymore. And thanks to technology, there's alternatives, and we have to make sure that they're working really good and we are more united in the energy sector. And now with the accession of Ukraine, the Western's integration of Ukraine is obviously a major shift in the energy system of Europe. And we make sure that Ukraine is completely Europeanized in its energy sector, from the nuclear to all other aspects. And it will be a big supplier of energy security for Europe, and that's also a great contribution Ukraine can make to the European project and to our progress in many aspects. And it's all also very good for the climate. But it's not our number one strategic priority. The strategic priority must be energy independence of Russia. That's, I think, then clear. Good. So far to the pan-European energy market. And looking forward, I will now discuss the next podcast, also some of the concrete deliverables. And I'm looking forward and I want to thank you for your attention.
Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast.